Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Live from America's finest city, it's the John Cantara Show.
Ho-ho, doctor!
Now, here's the coach, John Cantara, on 97.3 The Fan.
Well, hour number three, we're going until 3 o'clock, and then I'll turn you over to Messrs. Gwen and Chris. They'll be coming up live from Petco Park. They'll take you up to the Padre pregame show tonight. First pitch tonight at 7:10. Padres back at it tonight. I'm going to the ballpark tomorrow night. Well, you know when I come in here tomorrow, man, I'm going to have my pass around my neck. I'm going to be raring to go
You're
tomorrow night.
Fired up, and hopefully they get the win. It makes it even better.
I went down on... Friday and talked with Tony Walters after having him on. Boy, he was really appreciative. I met his dad the other night.
Really?
Yeah, his dad was down at the ball game, but Tony came up and he said, hey, coach, anytime you want me to come on next time we're in town, anytime you need me, just let me know. He was all fired up about being on the show, which makes you feel good when you're a talk show host trying to get guests. You get a ball player, and the guy comes up to you and says, hey, man, I really enjoyed being on your show. I'll do it anytime you need me.
Yeah, it was a really good interview, and you always got a cheer for the San Diego natives. And he's had a really good season and kind of put himself on the map last year in that that wild card game with the Cubs, so hopefully he continues to build on it.
Whenever a guy like Tony Walters comes up to me and says, hey, I really enjoyed being on the show, anytime you need me, you know, just get a hold of me, reminds me of the late, great Pat Tillman. Pat Tillman, we all know, got killed fighting for his country. And when Pat was playing for the Arizona Cardinals, my producer at the time, when I was at the legendary station, the 690 years ago, he got a hold of Pat Tillman. We had Pat Tillman on two or three times. Pat Tillman was such a cool dude. Such a cool dude. He'd go, coach, he goes, here's my phone number. Here's my number. You call me anytime you need me. And we used to call Pat at his house before he became a Ranger. And, you know, we'd call him. He had just gotten married, I think, just before he went into the Rangers. And, you know, his wife, I think it was his girlfriend at that time. And, I mean, they were really cool people. I never talked to her other than she answered the phone one time. But when I have a guy like Tony Walters say, hey, man, I really enjoyed coming on with you. Anytime we're in town, you know, just let the PR people know that you want me, and I'll be more than happy to come on. Reminds me of Pat Tillman, because in this day and age now, where PR people of different organizations, they're afraid for you to even talk to their players. A guy like Pat Tillman would just give you his numbers. Hey, give me a call anytime. Don't worry about going through PR, man. He was just a down-to-earth guy. Good guy. Okay, I want to get back to the Padres story today. And again, coming up at 2:35, we're going to get to Lincoln Kennedy, who's the color analyst for the Oakland Raiders. And this Antonio Brown situation, I think, is getting rectified a little bit today. The NFL said, hey, you're not playing with the helmet you want to play with. It has to be approved. The NFL Players Association came out and said, hey, you can't use the helmet. Well, Antonio Brown now has come out with a statement on Twitter. He goes, quote, while I disagree with the arbitrator's decision, I'm working on getting back to full health and looking forward to rejoining my teammates on the field. I'm excited about this season, appreciate all the concerns about my feet, and unquote. And that was on Twitter from Antonio Brown just not too long ago. Now, Adam Schefter from ESPN, who, along with Chris Mortensen, are the insiders of the NFL, with you know, some of the other guys jumping around as insiders as well. And we had a great one on last week from Radio.com, Jason Lockenfour. He's right up there with the best in the business. And he got Jay Glazer. But Adam Schefter is the one that came out last week and said Antonio Brown would be willing to retire if he couldn't wear the helmet he wanted. Now, we never heard those words from Antonio Brown's lips, but that's what Adam Schefter reported. And Schefter's pretty doggone good. I want to get back to the Padres, because right now, and Bob Chandler, you know, kind of answered my question, and I wanted to see what Bob was going to say about the catching position. I mean, the way for Francisco Mejia is swinging the bat right now, how can he not be your starting catcher the remainder of this year and go into spring training? And, you know, you've got to kind of wonder now, with the way things are going, Mejia's getting better behind the plate. Is he Johnny Bench or Carlton Fisk or Thurman Munson? No, he's not. But is he getting better? Absolutely. Maybe a lot of that work he did during the offseason with Rod Barajas is starting to take hold. And now that he's back there consistently catching night after night after night, getting more comfortable with different pitchers and what they throw. And let's face it, this is probably not the easiest staff in the world to catch because, number one, you got a lot of different guys. Plus, you got a lot of young guys that are out there trying to throw the ball 100 miles an hour, and sometimes they don't know where that ball's going. In fact, a high percentage of the time, they don't know where it's going. So Mejia's doing a much better job. Are there going to be times where he spits the bit behind the plate and really has a rough night? Absolutely. You know what? Get in line. Everybody has those nights. Do the Padres have the best catcher defensively in baseball right now? Yeah, they probably do in Austin Hedges. Unfortunately, he's hitting 186 right now, and the other kid's a switch hitter with a cannon arm who's hitting 280. And the guy's just tearing it up. I gave you those numbers early in the program. I mean, Mejia's just absolutely on fire swinging the bat. I mean, he's been unbelievable. He's got five straight multi-hit ball games right now, just a crush in the baseball. And there's no reason to take him out of the lineup. Padres are playing well. Andy feels comfortable with him hitting in that sixth position in the lineup. But, I mean, his numbers right, absolutely fantastic. And Austin Hedges, 1-for-14 in the month of August. You know, he's not getting a lot of playing time, but 1-for-14 in the month of August, that's not getting it done in any way, shape, or form. So I think, from what I take, and going back to a question that I answered, kind of with a question mark the week of the All-Star break, you know, who won the trade, the Cleveland Indians or the Padres? Well, I think we always talk about trades need to work out for both ball clubs. Well, it's finally starting to work out for the San Diego Padres, because Mejia now is getting consistent playing time and he's showing what he can do. So I think you got to go ahead and give the man his due. I know there's a big group of people out there that love Austin Hedges, and I'm one of them. I raise my hand as I sit in studio right now. But if one guy's hitting 280, the other guy's hitting 186, I got to go with the 280 guy right now until further notice. Now, Annie Heilbrunn, who we love Annie, she was on with Ben and Woods this morning. And she talked a little bit about Austin Hedges and the situation. And here's some of the thoughts that Annie had regarding Austin Hedges.
I think Austin is really taking it upon him to be responsible in the sense of, like, staying positive and encouraging and not becoming someone who is kind of going to, like, get stuck in the weeds on this. I think that's a big part of Austin's growth is he wants to be someone who wants to be able to, you know, go along with whatever is best for the team and also continue to contribute to the team. So as it started earlier, you know, he was still very involved in kind of helping to formulate, you know, the approach for the pitcher that day and kind of still staying, you know, at the top of kind of corralling the pitchers, you know, which he's been doing, and managing the pitchers, which he's been doing all season, and also just kind of encouraging and supporting Mejia. Now, obviously, as the more this goes on and you have Mejia catching now like every 3 days at least, you know, and Austin's the one that's really just filling in that one day. I don't know. You know, it's a good question because you're going to get it. You're obviously, as a player, you want to be on the field. And so I think it's going to be an interesting point of growth for him. But he hasn't shown anything in the clubhouse to the contrary of being someone who is going to try to help the team in whatever role, whether limited or more full-time right now.
Yeah.
You've got to imagine, yeah, it's definitely going to be hard.
Austin Hedges does a great job working with the pitching staff, working with Darren Balsley, working with Andy Green, and he should still be involved. And Austin should take this time and not hang his head. And I know, hey, when your name isn't written in the lineup card, it's not fun. And when you're sitting over there chewing seeds and spitting sunflower seeds 3 out of 4 games, it can't be fun when you've been the starting catcher the last few years here in San Diego. He's been given ample time. Does anybody disagree with me that he has been given ample time to solidify the spot, but he can't hit well enough? He had a great second half last year after the All-Star break. He hit 231 on the year. I mean, that's his career high. And right now he's hitting 186. And the other kid has gotten an opportunity. And to Francisco Mejia's credit, it took him a while to get going. But now that he's in there day in and day out, he's done a marvelous job. But I think Austin Hedges, rather than hang his head, and we talk about the 72-hour rule, like when guys get called up, or I should say sent down to AAA or to AA, you know, guys are upset, they're pissed more than anything else. But you got 72 hours, you report to your ball club, and hey, you got to go back to playing baseball. If not, you're only hurting yourself and hurting the ball club, and then you're probably not going to get back to the big leagues all that quick if you go down there with a negative attitude. You got to go down. It's a game of production. How many times have we said that? It's a game of production. If you don't produce, you're not playing. And Austin Hedges is not producing offensively. And the Padres, like Bob Chandler brought up, you got a pitcher. You got Luis Urias not hitting 150 yet. You can't have a guy hitting 186. I mean, between the catcher hitting 186, your middle infielder at second base hitting under 150, and then a pitcher, that's like three innings per game that you're giving away for the most part. You can't do that. So is there anybody out there that disagrees that Francisco Mejia, at least until further notice, should be the Padres' starting catcher? Does anybody disagree with that? Our phone number, 833-288-0973, 833-288-0973. When we come back, we'll get more into a little bit of Antonio Brown, and also want to whet your appetite because we've got a great guest coming up today at 2:35. A longtime NFL player, now a color analyst with the Oakland Raiders, San Diegan, Lincoln Kennedy going to be joining me. We still got to get to our Hang a Star play of the day. And, of course, we'll head out to Petco Park and hear from Gwynn and Chris. Coach John Quintero, thanks so much for joining me today. This is 97.3 The Fan. 107 yards and a total of 74 touchdowns. I mean, that's absolutely off the chart. Speaking of off the chart, there's a gentleman that's going to join me next, a great guy, does great work for the Raiders and, of course, played for a long time in the National Football League. I was fortunate enough to see him play in high school down at Morse High School for John Shacklett. Lincoln Kennedy will join me next as Coach John Quintero rolls to the top of the hour right here on 97.3 The Fan. Yeah, Coach John Quintero with you to the top of the hour. We're going to hear from Lincoln Kennedy here shortly. We'll also get the Hang a Star play of the day as we work our way towards our crossover with Gwynn and Chris. But we're going to talk a little Oakland Raiders football. Everyone, I think here in Southern California, either loves the Raiders or hates the Raiders. And I'm sure there are a lot of people in my listening audience right now that when the Raiders do move over to Las Vegas, people will go over and make it a nice long weekend and have a good time. You look at the Raiders last year, only 4-12. Divisional record last year, 1-5. You know, can they really close the gap this year? I mean, you're talking about a couple of pretty good football teams with the Kansas City Chiefs and the Chargers. And I don't know about the Denver Broncos. I would certainly think Denver is going to be a much improved team with Joe Flacco. I think Vic Fangio will do a better job as a head coach. Vance Joseph, he's moved on. I didn't really think that after watching Vance Joseph call that first year, I wasn't sure he would be asked back for a second year, but he was, and it didn't work out, and now Vance Joseph has moved on, and they bring in Vic Fangio, who a year ago was still looking for a head job, but now he's 60 years of age, and finally, after about 30 years in the NFL, going to get an opportunity to be a head coach. But, you know, when you're talking about the Raiders, a lot of question marks surrounding the Raiders. We've talked a lot the last couple of days about Antonio Brown. You know, is Derek Carr going to be able to get the job done behind center? I don't know. I mean, what kind of working relationship does he have right now with John Gruden? And is John Gruden the same coach he was once upon a time when he led the Raiders the first time and then led Tampa Bay to a Super Bowl title? I thought it was interesting. I had a chuckle a little bit the other day. Nathan Peterman is in camp right now with the Oakland Raiders. And Peterman, I know that in the afternoon show, they kind of make a little fun of him for last year with Buffalo. But, hey, we're going to head out right now to the SDCCU hotline. This is a gentleman that I got to watch play high school football here in San Diego at Morris High for the great and our good friend John Shacklett. He went on, had a great career in college at Washington, longtime NFLer, a Pro Bowler, an All-Pro, now doing great work on the Raiders broadcast as their color analyst on radio. Lincoln Kennedy joins me on 97.3 The Fan. Lincoln, how are you today?
Wonderful, John. How about yourself,
man? Doing very well. I was watching the other night. I didn't see it live, but I stayed up late on the NFL Network and watched the replay of the Rams-Oakland game, and it looked like the Raiders did a lot of good things in that game.
Well, I think they had a good start. Look, they're going to have to try to get some depth from not only their offensive line mainly, but a lot of the players. And more importantly, as John Gruden said when we had a production meeting prior to the game, was that, look, he's got to find a way to develop a backup quarterback. You know, that seems to be the sort of thing that most teams are trying to develop. They know what they have in a starter, but if, you know, heaven forbid, something happens to that starter like Derek Carr, he goes down, you got to have a proven backup who's capable of going in there and taking over. So they did get a little work done, and it seemed to be pretty good, but there's only so much that you can take from preseason these days, John, because I know coaches on both sides of the ball who go either very generic, very vanilla, just try to get through the game without getting anybody hurt, rather than put in a whole a lot of things with schemes. So you really have no idea where you're at.
Hey, Lincoln, let me ask you this. You played a long time in the league. You played with the Raiders. You played with the Falcons. After you got into your career, you know, 4 or 5 years, and you were a starter, and you know you had a job, how did you attack training camp?
Training camp was looked at almost like a necessary evil. You know, no one liked it, but you had to do it. And, you know, back in the time when I played, it seems like so long ago because of the way the rules are now, you just wanted to survive it. You knew that there were a lot of guys around you that were what we call camp bodies. You know, they basically doubled the normal roster just so they had enough people to basically throw to the wolves, if you will, throughout the time of camp. But it was just a matter of survival. And the way you looked at preseason games is a lot like that too, as well. You know, first preseason game, you went out there, got a little bit of work, but not too much. Second, a little bit more. The third, probably your most out of preseason. And the fourth, you had completely off because, you know, I've always had the rosters are pretty much set even before they go to training camp. They're just trying to fine-tune it with a couple of players here or there. So that made training camp and the preseason football almost like a necessary evil.
Lincoln Kennedy joining me on our SDCCU fan hotline, talking Oakland Raiders football on 97.3 The Fan. Let's talk about Mr. Brown. This guy is an extremely talented wide receiver. He's been kind of unhappy the last year. I don't know what's going on off the field, but on the field, when he's on there, he's very, very productive. Now it looks like he'll be headed back once his feet feel a little bit better. What are you hearing on Antonio as far as those feet with him, Lincoln? I mean, is he going to be out a week, or is he going to be able to come back and start working out after the cryotherapy problem?
Mom's the word. You know, I'm hearing everything that's non-football related about Antonio Brown, to be honest with you, and it's kind of frustrating. I agree with your points. You know, when he's on the field, he can be a game changer, and I think that's what the Raiders are looking forward to. But all this extracurricular stuff has really left a sour taste in my mind about, you know, what's going on with him, number 84. But the thing is that the Raiders are hoping to get him back once this whole dispute with now his helmet is resolved, because under league rules, if he goes out on the football field with illegal equipment, they get a penalty. There's a fine that's associated with that. So they can't afford to put him on the field right now until this thing is heard out. So, you know, John Gruden came out the other night after the game and totally in support of Antonio Brown, which is, I think, what a head coach in this position you kind of have to do. But they want to get him back as quickly as possible, being a personal matter or not. They want to get him back because they want to get him in, and they want to have the impact. They're hoping that he can have the impact on the field like they wanted when they first signed him.
Hey, Lincoln, you've been around the NFL a long time. You're doing the games last year. You're watching what's unfolding in John Gruden's first year back on the sidelines. You've watched what they've done during the offseason. You're at training camp. You're watching the preseason game. Where are the big battles on this football team? Are they all over the place, or are there a couple of positions, aside from you mentioned the backup quarterback, where are the real position battles in camp?
All over the place. Last year, they had problems with the offensive line, having to start two rookie tackles. They had problems at receivers. They weren't able to keep anybody healthy, really. It was a very thin line. There was no depth, especially on the defense. With Paul Gunther, he really had nobody that he could rely on defense. So the battles are all over the place. That's why they addressed it the way they did it in offseason as well as the draft. Not only are they trying to get starters that they can rely on and depend on, but they're also trying to create depth, because we saw at the the end of last year that it was a battle of attrition. Look, there was a one point last year where the Raiders had on the field 13 first-year players playing the game. And that's almost unheard of. Rookies are first-year players. Almost unheard of in the National Football League, and there's no way to be productive. And that's one of the reasons why they finished with the record that they did last year. So, you know, they're trying to build depth at every position. They're trying to get people who know the scheme, who can execute the scheme. More importantly, they're trying to make sure that Derek Carr stays upright and healthy, because he took a lot of shots last year, and he became a little bit shell-shocked. He did. He was a little bit – I know the numbers are a little bit in his favor, but they're really not indicative of how much fear he had playing quarterback back there, because there was just so many people around his legs and around him in general.
Lincoln Kennedy, our guest on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. Lincoln, there was a lot made, and you know how it is in the media. Guys need to get a story every day, and there's been a lot over the winter and coming into this season that – you know, Gruden and Carr aren't on the same page. Can you talk at all about that?
No, I don't think it's not on the same page. I think here's the thing. You know, Gruden came in with the notion of making a transition from Oakland to Vegas and making a team a winner. That's what Mark Davis wanted. Gruden wasn't tied to Derek Carr, even though he liked him when he came out of college. So last year's, you know, fiasco sort of the way Gruden's system is, and it's hard to explain if you're not paring into it, Gruden gives you as an option. He always has a place for you to go with the football. Last year, Derek was trying so hard to make things happen, he sometimes went away from that, the normal thought pattern. So you saw a lot of those little arguments or discussion when Derek came out to the sideline, or Gruden saw him, you know, what are you doing? What are you thinking? Because in Gruden's mind, I kind of set you up for success, and you went away from that. And there were times that he struggled. So this year, the second year, be it as it is, you know, Derek Carr has an option, opportunity to really understand and embrace Gruden's system. And he surrounded himself with some weapons now. You know, the reason why they went out and got Josh Jacobs, the reason why they got Tyrell Williams, you know, guys like that. They went out and gave Derek some weapons, so now he doesn't have to try to improvise as much as he did last year. So it should work a little bit better. But I think, look, these are both competitors, John Gruden and Derek Carr. They want to be good, they want to be great, and they want to win. There's no beef. There's no, you know, no sort of trifle between them, because they just want to succeed, and they're hoping they can do it together.
Hey, I got to ask you before I let you get out of here about, and I know he didn't catch a ball, I don't believe, in the game the other day I was watching. The kid out of Clemson, a fifth-round pick, Hunter Renfro, seemed like he played there for Dabo Swinney at Clemson for about 12 years, but he finally has moved on to the National Football League now. Does he have a legitimate shot to make this ball club, you think?
Oh, yes. They're really proud of Hunter Renfro. In sort of a way that you can kind of see what they're trying to get. You know, Minnesota's got a receiver in Thielson. They're trying. I mean, that's really good. The Rams have got a receiver in Cooper Kupp out of Eastern Washington, who I watch his career being on the West Coast. That's what they're trying to get for Hunter Renfro. They're trying to catch lightning in a bottle, where they have a slot receiver that you see how many teams, like what Brady does in New England with his slot receivers. They're trying to duplicate that, and I think they got it in Hunter Renfro.
Hey, I'm going to let you get out of here on this. I know your high school head coach very, very well, and I've known him for many years. I remember you playing at Morse. Okay. What's your greatest moment in a Morse Tiger uniform?
There was when I first joined the football team and Coach Shaq, we were running a wishbone. And I remember instinctively he was telling me, you know, he gave me the rule of wishbone blocking. First man, head up, inside, on or off the line of scrimmage. I still remember it to this day. And we were going through a walkthrough, and Coach Gruden, Coach Shackler was trying to get me to take a step on it, how I'm going to block down on a linebacker. And I said, you know, I just stopped him for a moment, and I said, well, wouldn't it be more conducive if I took this step or this path? And he looked at me, he's like, he was chewing his athletic tape, he took it out and he threw it at me. He's like, just get there, just block the guy. I don't care. So it was one of those fond memories that I have with Coach Shaq and those times that we went with each other, because he told me many, many times, you are too analytical to play this game sometimes. You overthink it. Just do it. And I said, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to get it done, coach, one way or the other. But always fond memories. He's the reason why I become the man I am today, because he stuck with me and he gave me the opportunity. So I'm so fond of him.
And Lincoln, at the end of the day, when you're an offensive lineman, block that guy any way you can, right?
Exactly. That's exactly what it comes down to.
Hey, we'll look forward to doing this again. Thanks so much for the time, and keep up all the great work. I know you're doing a lot of different things, but you're doing them all really, really well.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much for saying those kind words, and I look forward to doing it again as well.
Be well.
All right, be well, buddy.
There you go. Lincoln Kennedy joining us on our SDCCU fan hotline. A reminder, SDCCU has low mortgage loan rates, equal housing opportunity. You can apply now at SDCCU.com. Yeah, I remember when Shaq used to run that wishbone. I saw them play a playoff game against Vista. I don't think if they threw two passes, they were 0 for 2. But I'm not even sure they threw a pass in one of those playoff games once upon a time. Hey, I want to remind everyone you can experience an afternoon of barbecue, bourbon, and blues on Sunday, August 18th from 3 to 6 p.m. at the Center, home of Lexus Escondido, award-winning Abby's Texas Barbecue, and Steinmetz Sipping Bourbon will be on hand to the thrill of your taste buds. Go to our events page right now at 973thefansd.com for early bird discount tickets while they last. And with that, let's get to our Hang a Star play of the day.
What play separated the winners from the losers? It's time for the Hang a Star play of the day.
You can hang a star on that, baby.
A 97.3 The Fan.
The 2-2. Swing, a high fly ball. Deep right field. This is going to go. Rio Ruiz hits a walk-off home run out of the flag court, and the Orioles win 8-7. Rio Ruiz pumps his chest as he rounds third, high fives Jose Flores, flips the batting helmet, and absolutely lunges into a dog pile at home plate.
That was the Hang a Star play of the day on the John Cantara Show on 97.3 The Fan.
How about that? The Baltimore Orioles come yesterday down to their final out. Rio Ruiz, two-run bomb with two outs there in the ninth inning. That ended the Astros' eight-game winning streak. The Orioles won it yesterday 8-7. And think about this. The Orioles got beat over the weekend by the Astros 23-2, and then they get that win yesterday. That was pretty good stuff. I want to head out right now to Petco Park because we got a couple of gentlemen, and we're going to get to them in just a minute. But I want to mention this. We do have a little bit of time right now as far as the NBA, and I mentioned this earlier, and I want to get it in. I'm sure Tony is probably all fired up about this today. But the NBA is going to experiment with new start times on national TV. And I can tell you right now, I'm not very happy about it. After the NBA studied the different time starts this past year, the 10:30 Eastern time starts on TNT did not go all that well, on ESPN as well. So what they're going to do, they're going to go back 56 games last year. This year, they're only going to have 33 games this year on national TV with those 7:30 start times. Here on the West Coast. So, you know, that dogs us with the Lakers. The Lakers last year had 19 games that started at 7:30, 10:30 p.m. Eastern time on national TV. This year, they're going to take it down to 10 games. But, you know, that doesn't mean that we're not going to see Laker games if we get, you know, the local cable provider. And I get them all. I get them all. So, you know, I get all 82 Laker games, whether they're on national TV or local TV. So this is not going to affect me all that much. Where it's going to affect me is I'm not going to probably see as much of Kenny Smith and Charles Barkley and Shaq and Ernie Johnson and those guys. If you haven't paid attention to those guys, that is the goofiest group in the world. They're so fun. I mean, I find myself at 11:15 on a Thursday night laughing because those guys are so funny. I mean, Barkley's great. And Shaq, when you can understand him, he's not gruffling, he's great. Kenny Smith's great. And Ernie Johnson does a great job of being the guy that is controlling the hits there in that studio. But we're going to have some games now. 19 Laker games last year. They're taking it down to 10 this year. Last season, the TNT ratings were down 15%. Well, 15%. And ESPN dropped to 1%, according to the statistics. I'll tell you the bottom line of this whole thing. It is kind of the LeBron James situation. LeBron James isn't playing those 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock games on TNT any longer because he's out west. And there's nobody really on the East Coast, or I should say maybe on the West Coast, that want to pay attention to the Eastern Conference. And that's a big problem right now.
Do you think that – so this will – keep in mind that – so you can watch every game still.
Well, locally I can watch every game. Where it's going to hurt, it's like Golden State. Golden State – last year had 18 games on national TV that started at 7:30 from Oracle, and now they're going to the new arena. This year it's going to go down to 11 games. So unless those games are on NBA TV, which they probably won't be, they could be, I'll miss out on about 7 Golden State games this next year. But as far as the Lakers and Clippers, I'm not going to miss out on anything because I get all of those games on my cable provider because it's local TV.
How excited are you for... I guess, is it a revamped rivalry between them and the Clippers with the
acquisition? Well, I don't ever think it's been a rivalry. I mean, it's been a rivalry simply because two teams call themselves L.A., and the two teams have been in the same building for a long period of time. But as far as on the court, it really hasn't been all that big a rivalry until the last 6 years where the Lakers couldn't make the playoffs, and they've been dreadful. And now, really, I mean, you look at it, I mean, at least of all on paper, and we'll see how it plays out on the court, the Clippers right now have the better ball club. But, you know, again, we're not playing the game on paper. We're going to play it on the court, and apparently they're going to open up on opening night, Lakers-Clippers, and Christmas Day they'll go at it. When I go home today, I'm going to dissect both the baseball and the NBA schedule because I gave the fans a little bit earlier the baseball schedule when the Padres open up on March 26th against the Colorado Rockies and in the different interleague games. But, you know, I'm going to go home and look at the Lakers schedule and, you know, kind of find out how many times they're playing these games that aren't going to be on national TV. But, again, we'll be able to see them locally. And I would think that the fans are going to be really, really excited about Laker basketball. I mean, believe me, there are far more fans in San Diego that are Laker fans than there are Clipper fans. I mean, most people, when Donald Sterling decided to rip that team out of here and take them to L.A., it was like, you know, that's it. You're done. And I don't think there are too many fans in San Diego that really follow the Clippers. They may now because Kawhi Leonard's now a part of it, but I don't think so.
Do you see, speaking of Kawhi, the whole load management? So with LeBron, I mean, he's going to be 35 in December, I believe. Do you see him really tapering it off now? Like those?
I think that's a question that we're going to – it's a good question you bring up because I think it's going to be something that we're going to be talking about throughout the course of the year. I mean, but remember, prior to this year, prior to that groin strain, a year ago, remember when they went to the finals his last year there in Cleveland?
He played every game.
He played in every game, every regular season game and every postseason game. He played in over 100 games that year. And maybe that took its toll last year. But, you know, he's got a lot of things pulling at him. He's got all this stuff he's doing on TV in Hollywood. He's got a son that's starting, I think, high school this year. He's coming into a different phase of his life, and your priorities change. But, I mean, his priority is he wants to win another NBA title. I certainly understand that. But at the end of the day, you know, you get pulled in different directions. You only have so many hours during the day. I love LeBron James. In fact, I was talking with a gentleman yesterday. I was getting a cup of coffee at 7-Eleven, and he had an NBA hat on. He didn't have any one team. And I go, "You a Laker fan?" He goes, "Nah, not really." He goes, "But I'm a LeBron James fan." I go, "Then you're a Laker fan." And we started talking while we were getting coffee. Real nice man. But, you know, I think people have a lot of respect for LeBron James as a player, as a person, as a man, and the way he carries his life, and it's really good stuff. Hey, I want to remind everyone, I guess we're not going to do the crossover. Those guys are out and about. They're getting ready for their big 3-hour show. But tomorrow, we've got Scott Miller on to talk about his national article today on Bleacher Report on Fernando Tatis Jr. We're going to talk to the play-by-play voice of El Paso tomorrow, Tim Haggerty. And we're going to have Padre infielder, a local guy out of Valhalla. We're going to have Greg Garcia on the program. Will, nice job today, my friend. We'll look forward to doing it again tomorrow afternoon. And remember, keep that dial tuned right here to 97.3 The Fan. We got Padre baseball coming up at 7:10. Until tomorrow at 12 o'clock, Coach John Katera, have a great afternoon, everyone. Bye-bye.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.